Vayeshev, we know that the name of the parasha is called Vayeshev. But we know that the word Vayeshev is like to settle down. When somebody wants to relax, settle down. After all, Yaakov, when you look at his life, everything about his life was not exactly Vayeshev. He just suffered and suffered and suffered. We're just finishing reading that his brother was chasing him to kill him. And here, Vayeshev Yaakov. So the Chachamim, the sages are telling us, he was trying to relax, you know, after the suffering. Because after all, when you go into so much pain, I think it's time to celebrate. All of us, you know, when you finish something which is painful, all of us, it's very normal behavior. We need to go and relax, you know, it's over. Time to relax, open the champagne, and it's over. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv, and the problem again starting. Problem is starting again. What started the problem? It's written that Yosef is second younger son, if I can say it, start with his vision about his future. And when he starts with his vision about his future, he starts telling his brother what seemed from the dream that is better than them. What seemed from the dream that is better than them. And we know, those of you who read the Torah, know the Bible, know the Torah, right? We know that in the future, it's really proven because he was the king of Egypt. And why is Yosef really bothered to go tell it to his brother? Second question, why they hate him? Because of a dream. If somebody tell you that they dream, that they have a Ferrari and you don't, it bother you, but you know, hating him. You say, this guy is crazy. Man, but why are you bothered by that? They couldn't even say hello to him. לא יכלו לדבר לשלום. For a dream. ויחלום יוסף חלום. יגד לאחיו. And every time he has a dream, he go talk to his brother. Who else he going to talk to? And there is sheep and cows. He talked about. And he say, I have another dream. And then he's telling them another dream, very similar to the other. And ויוסיפו עוצנותו. They hate him even more. All about dream. ויחלום עוד חלום. Third dream. Now, I want to ask you something. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. You have a dream. The audience don't like your dream. You keep coming to them. I mean, they said, listen, I really don't like your joke. And you come back. Hey, I have another joke. We don't like you. It's not about the dream. We don't like you. ויחלום עוד חלום. And he said, that's the last dream. He said, I see the sun. I see the moon. And then I see 11 stars bow to me. He told it to his father and to his brother what happened. His father was very harsh on him, was very tough on him. Vayigar bo aviv. Ma ha-chalom hazeh she-chalamta? What is that dream? You want to tell me that me and your mother will come and bow to you? Now, you need to know, by that time, his mother died. Rachel was already dead. She was not alive. When you look at many commentary on this section, before we're going into the Zohar, they say that something we need to learn from Yaakov. Beautiful, beautiful lesson. Yaakov started to look around, and he saw that the brother are very jealous. When he saw that the brother are very jealous, he said, listen, if I will not do something to diffuse the hatred, I will put my own son in danger. So he make himself stupid, Yaakov, and he said, is me and my mom going to bow to you? Meaning he's telling his brother, his mom is not even alive. So if his mom is not alive and we're going to go bow to him, it's definitely not true. So why are you hating him for a dream which is even fake? That's what he tried to do, Yaakov. So beautiful. So the brother went to Shechem, Nablus. And his father tell him, why don't you go with your brother? And we have to ask again a question, why is the father send him to his enemy? And he met the angel Gabriel, and Gabriel is helping him to go there. They're really angry with him in that moment. And they say, let's kill him. And there is a debate if to kill him or to do something else. So Reuven tried to save him from them, and he was able to say, don't kill him. And he was hoped that if they put him in that pit, In the morning it will come, or at night it will take him back. But we know what happened. In the meantime, Yehuda came up with an idea to sell him to slavery. Sell him to slavery. So why would you say, why? And they went to the father, and they told the father, do you recognize this clothing of your son? They put blood. And you know, it's called Midah Keneged Midah, meaning, if you remember what Yaakov did to his father Yitzchak, you remember what he did? He also came to his father, and what he did with him, he said to him, I am your son Esau. What did he do? He slaughtered also animal. The same thing that he did to his father happened to him as a test. He said, from here we learn that there is a law of reincarnation, but there is also the law of cause and effect. Everything is cause and effect. So when something that you're not happy happened to you and you get angry, you don't need to get angry. Just look back and look inside. Where in my life I did something similar? Now, if you cannot find what's wrong with you, that's really wrong. You know, how do you know you develop yourself spiritually? You find a lot of things wrong with you. Not from a guilt point of view, not from a blaming point of view. I'm not talking about that level. Talk about that you find what's wrong and you want to fix it. That's like taking responsibility. It's a, we know tonight is the ilulah of the great tzaddik named Magid Mimezrich. Tonight is the ilulah of the Magid Mimezrich. And it says about Magid Mimezrich, his student is Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk, right, that before he go to sleep, he would found 100 things that he did wrong that day. So how do you know that you're growing up spiritually? You found what's wrong with you. You know, we always can point finger at other people and blaming them. We're very good at that. But really to look inside, you know, in New York, in Wall Street, they say, you know, when you are pointing finger to somebody else, there is a three finger pointing to you. That's what they say in Wall Street, something like that. You know, you're pointing finger, you have a three finger looking at you. Meaning, why don't you look at yourself? We can't change anything until I'm looking inside and try to change something internally. Bottom line, Yehuda find a way to do it. Yaakov has to deal with the death of his son, or fake death. That's, I'm going to the story before I'm going to the Perushim. And he was sold to slavery. And then it's written about Yehuda. Yehuda. Why we have to read about Yehuda? Because he's the one who's in charge of the selling of his brother to slavery. And the Torah said, whoever sells his brother to slavery is supposed to die. Yehuda loses his wife. He feels lonely. I'm telling you the story as it's written. And I hope you're going to read it. Not try to make your brain crazy about the Torah. It's not a comfortable story, but you need to know it exists. His wife died, and his daughter-in-law, Tamar, marries his first son. First son, look how beautiful Tamar is. He makes sure she will not get pregnant. Because we know that when a woman gets pregnant, every child takes a beauty. It takes part of the beauty of the woman to the child. I don't know if you know that. So every part of the beauty go to the child. So he died. Her second husband, which is the brother, because there is something called Yibum. I don't know if you know the rules of Yibum. It's based on reincarnation. Reincarnation law by the Zohar, by the Torah, say that if a brother doesn't have any children and he died, then the wife take his brother and marry him. And then the first child they're going to have will be a boy for sure. And it will be the reincarnation of her ex-husband. Now you know where Oedipus complex come from. You know what I'm talking about? Okay. What is the brother does, the second brother? He's also, he cannot handle it. He said, the wife is too beautiful. If I make love to her and she become pregnant, become a balagan again. I'm losing the beauty. So he decided also not to do it. He died too. And we have a third child left. She come to Yehuda, say, give me the third boy by the law. I suppose, the father. He said, there is another law said that if a woman has two husbands that die, the third will die for sure. For sure. I think it's called widow or something like that. Black widow. That there is something like this in America that I call. But they don't know where it's come from. It's come from reincarnation. I cannot go into it right now. You can listen to my Ari study when I go to that details. But I'm like, he refused. Yehuda said, I'm sorry, I cannot give my third boy. I'm sorry. Please. So, okay. what Tamar is doing, very weird things that if you read it, and you should read it, she dressed like a prostitute. Good profession, right? Yehuda, what is he doing? He's lonely. Remember, he lost his wife. Okay? He's lonely. She's a prostitute. She's the daughter-in-law. I want to make sure everybody's clear. I'm going to put my glasses. I can see your expression. So, somehow, they meet each other. He like her. And he said, how do we make this deal? She say, well, you have to pay. He said, well, I don't have my checkbook or credit card. I don't have anything. He say, you should read the story on your own. You will see it's not far from it. Say, I have the, Patilia, I have the thing that I stamped the animal with, and I have the ring. And so I say, okay, so you leave it here, and then you come back with the cash. Then I trust you, because there's no free lunches. So okay. He put it up. Remember, that's a father-in-law, right? Am I saying it correctly? Father-in-law. Something happened between them. So he sent, he's very rich. Yehuda is very rich. So he sent to the guy who worked with him, the shepherd. Said, do me a favor, here's cash, give extra. There is, I'm shocked, like in those days they can talk like this. I was with that woman. She's a prostitute, just pay her what she belongs. Today it's all done quiet. Those days, you know, here's the money, $500, please. And that's the tip. Go there. In the Torah, guys. So you don't come up. It wasn't invented in Hollywood. Here. You think you're inventing some wildness. Here. Po, corpo. You go. To pay. He come back and says, sir, no girls there. Well, no girls. It was there. So no. And they told me she's not even, lo hayta sham kdesha. Kdesha mean prostitute in Hebrew. She was not even prostitute. So forget about it. Story continue. Listen to this. Yehuda hear that his daughter-in-law is pregnant. He is the ruler of the entire tribe. Say, bring this woman, we burn her to ashes. So primitive, right? It's just 3 months ago, sleeping. Now burn it. I mean, the Me Too campaign will kill him, right? If it will be existent, right? He bring it down. She's going to the fire. They put the woods already, the barbecue, the everything. They're going to burn her to steak. She say no words. He come to her, put the fire, say, why did you do that? Why did you do this pregnancy? You know it's not allowed until you get married, all this and that. And who is the father? He said, the father of this kid I'm carrying on that, she gave him the ring and the stamp. She didn't say it's you. She didn't say it was you. He just gave it to him. It's an elegant. You know what he said to the entire village? Tzatka I mimeni. She's more righteous than me. And of course, everybody knew the story. And she gave birth to how many children? Two. Boy. Reincarnation of who? Two. Husband. From there come what? The Messiah. Messiah. Which means after that come Ruth. King David. King David. Isha. Mashiach ben David. Weird story. Weird story in our Torah. Weird story. Like, usually the rabbi in the synagogue don't like to mention that. In the section, just skip it. Because the Katuv. Katuv. So what do we do with this? How can we look at it? It's to understand, there is a lesson that all the Kabbalists talk about, is to understand not to insult a person even when you're right. She was right. He was right. He was wrong. Elegant. Elegant. He say, I rather wait for my time to speak until that. But why she did that? So the commentary explained, she knew that the house of Yehuda will be the house that will bring the Messiah. The end of, what is Messiah mean? Messiah means the end of chaos, the end of problem. She wanted to be the mother who carried that child. And she knew she's supposed to be. But she lost two husbands. Because they were abusing whatever they abuse. And that. So this is a good story that I want to share with you. Yosef, we're going back to Yosef. It's almost like a Broadway show, this parasha. Amazing, amazing. And Yosef is now getting tempted by the wife of his boss, Eshet Potiphar. It says, but it feseu bebigdo. She hold him in his clothing. And she tell him, shichvaimi. Sleep with me. A lot of sex in this parasha. A lot of sex. Welcome, welcome. So, she say, ותתפסהו בבגדו לאמור שכבה עמי ויעזוב בגדו בידה. So he come and he leave his clothing with her. וינס החוצה. He ran away. And then she told everybody, this man tried to rape me. Tried to rape me. What they do with him? They put him now in prison. When they put him in prison for something he didn't do, these two people in prison tell him a dream. Remember, he's a dream master. And his interpretation to their dream impressed them. And they've been released. Like he said, they will be released. He does a little mistake in the end. Look what he does. ולא זכר שר המשקים את יוסף וישכחהו. The minister of the drink didn't remember Yosef. Say the commentary, the reason he didn't remember, why? Look what it said. Because it said like that. In verse 15, כי אם זכרתני איתך כאשר איתב לך. Say, the dream that I interpreted to you, when you go to Pharaoh, please remind them that I'm here not for even a good reason. God say, you trust this messenger and you trust the king, but you don't trust God, I'm going to give you extra 2 years in prison. And I want to end up just with that story before we go into the Zohar. What is the message here for us with that last thing? We're not supposed to tell people what's, hey, it's time. You know, it's not supposed to, I mean, all what I'm teaching you all the time, initiate, motivate you to do something. You know, you got to do things. The idea is, while you're doing something that you do, you have to remember one thing. What you do is just a preparation for what exists. Let's say, I know a guy from Tzfat who believed that his soulmate is supposed to knock on his door. A tzaddik, a righteous man. God bless him. He's waiting. So how are you doing? Doesn't matter his name. He said, well, she didn't knock on my door yet. He said, but Mashu, you know, you can at least go out, say hello, cafe, tea, cappuccino, something. Smile, tell a joke. No. If God wanted, it come through the door. I know another person who said, I'm not taking pills because Moses also didn't take a pill. So those of you who know me from close, you know, I'm very direct. And I usually, being Israeli, being Scorpio, I don't leave a lot for imagination. I right away answer, but you're not Moses. What Moses? Yeah, Moses, yes, but don't you look at you. You're Moses? Where Moses? You need antibiotic right away. Where Moses? So a lot of those people compare things to be from God. Yes, God sent it to you, but you don't see it. You know, like the story with the guy who was in the storm, and they sent him a helicopter and a boat and everything like that. And he said, I'm believing God. In the end, he died. Go to God. He said, well, I believe in you. He said, so why didn't you take the boat and the helicopter and send you? It came in the form of a human being, but do something. Yosef, in his level, was supposed to trust. He was not supposed to say anything. Not even a word. Leave it alone. And for some reason, he fell there, and that's why he stayed 2 years. The story of the entire parasha is to be careful from yeshiva, vayeshev. When we settle down, let's say you have a certain amount of money you want to make. Everybody has a certain amount of money. A certain fame. Fame, some people want to become famous. Want to become famous. Which magazine you imagine to become famous? Time, Newsweek, I don't know what else is going on. Entertainment or something. You're famous now. Okay, I'll watch it. What do you do after that? As we teach on Thursday, your desires start to go down. A lot of time, when things going well for you, that's the chaotic time. Not when things going bad. When things going bad, don't worry. Because there is one thing you don't lose when things going bad. Desire. When things going good, you don't have desire. So what happened when you don't have desire? You start losing the thing that you have. How you start the morning? With Modani. Modani, you said to God, thank you, God, for bringing my soul. But it was yesterday too. How many times can you say Modani? What if you're 70 years old? 70 years old, time 365 days. What do we got? 21,000 days? To say Modani? Can you mean it? After 70 years? Modani, automatic, you don't even think. I have to say. But that's what's missing. We need to ignite the desire when you're comfortable. Don't be afraid when life is terrible. Be afraid when life is perfect. When things start to work according to your way, you're going down. Yaakov suffered a lot. After he suffered with the rape of Dinah last week, with Shimon and Levi killing the entire town and cheating them, problem after problem, Esau, he was dealing with everything perfectly. You know, I don't know if you know, you ever saw the movie Sword of Gideon? You saw that movie? It's an old movie. It's about what the Mossad did after Munich. It's a true story. And there is a scene there which really happened. Very sad part where the Mossad knew that they put bomb in their house. So they take every bomb from the house. The guy specialized in that. He go and he find all the bomb. And he tell his friend from the balcony, said, okay, you can come up. As they go up, the entire house explodes. Where was the last bomb? In the refrigerator. When you open the refrigerator to drink the beer after you think everything is over. Vayeshev. Just when you think it's over, that's the beginning. So when you settle down, don't. Don't settle down because, you know, people get married. A lot of time I see people, when I do a wedding for people, the other the chuppah, we're smiling. She's wearing that white chandelier or whatever, you know, that is like long. And there is the little girl with the flower and the pillow with the ring and happiness and the mother cry and they say, oh, and 1 week after there is a fight. They go into some island together, the husband and the wife. They go into Chacabupu or Medusa, or I don't know the name of that place next to Bahamas. You know, there is a name, Exuma. They go into Exuma. Oh, they're coming back almost getting divorced. Man, what a wedding, finish all your money. Now you come back, you want to get divorced. You don't even have money for a lawyer. What happened? Settle down. They build up the marriage till that moment and then crash. Be careful. Don't settle down. Don't. Just don't. Don't. Just don't settle down. So somebody asked me a question this week. He had a goal to make a lot of money. And after 5 years of working very hard, he achieved that goal. So he called me this morning. Aliyah. So what's now? You worked with me for 5 years. We achieved that goal. I want to hug you for doing that and believe in me. I said, but I'm afraid now. So now we take that goal, we double it, and we go for the next goal. So that's it. So that's it. Try to do it now. You start from zero. Now you're missing. Let's say if his goal, let's say, was, I don't know, 500,000 or 5 million. So can you imagine you arrive 5 million, and now your goal is 10. What happened to the 5? It's now no longer. It's become 10. So it's the same 5. It's again and again. Please remember that because that's how you get for Vayeshev. Now let's go to the Zohar and see how the Zohar explains that part. We start with verse 11. Please, who's reading? Michelle, you reading?
Go ahead. But the righteous man who fears his master suffers many afflictions in this world in order not to believe in and join the evil inclination. And the Holy One, blessed be He, saves him from them all. As it is written, many of the afflictions of the righteous and Hashem delivers him out of them all. Note that it is literally written, many afflictions to the righteous, and not many of the afflictions of the righteous. This signifies that whoever suffers many afflictions is righteous because the Holy One, blessed be He, cares for him because the afflictions he suffers alienate him from the evil inclination. For this reason, the Holy One, blessed be He, cares for this man and delivers him from all in the world and the world to come. Happy is his lot.
So let's understand it for a second. Ever happened to you that you're about to do something bad that you know it's bad? Ever happened to you? You know it's bad. You're about to do it. You didn't do it yet. Ever happened to you? Before. 5 minutes before. Most of you don't know what I'm talking about, I guess. Okay, I guess it's only me. Right? Robert, you know what I'm saying? Okay. So it's a 5 minutes before. You know the 5 minutes before? A lot of time, weird things happen the 5 minutes before you do wrong thing. But we not remember that. Because we're fighting that thing. We think this is an obstacle. It's actually a gift. It's preventing you from... I think I told you that many years ago, before I met Debbie, I went on a date. So I don't have a car, I don't have anything. So there is a car that my friend let me use. I was living in Queens. And there is a voice in my head. It was Saturday night, the date. And the voice tell me, look, no, don't do that. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. I said, it's wrong. I don't want to hear. So I go to the car, I start the car, nothing. Make my hand dirty, you know, cables, problem. And the voice kept on, please don't. The nightmare of my life. The nightmare, like, it cannot be worse than that. But I couldn't listen. And I thought I'm supposed to overcome it. So how do you know when you're supposed to overcome something? Oh, when it's an evil inclination that God tried to help you not to go after. So the answer is if you see the W or if you see the letter M. If you see the letter M, which is me, which is all about me, it's most probably evil inclination. If you see the W, which is all about we, what's good for everybody, not what's just good for me, then most probably you have to overcome something. Is that clear what I just said, Robert? Is that clear? So the difference between the me and the W and the we, you know, when you turn the M and W, that's really want to make a difference. Because not every time you have to be stubborn. Stubborn is need to be used for when you're doing good. But stubborn not need to be used when you're doing bad. When you're doing bad, you're supposed to be not stubborn, the opposite. Okay, God prevent me from doing it, right? God prevent me from doing it. So let's say I'm sitting at a table and I love food. So there is a cake in front of me and I'm just grabbing the spoon. In front of me, there is a person full of chutzpah, full of audacity. Once I'm grabbing the spoon, he took the whole cake to him. Great news for me. But because I'm addicted to food, I don't think it's great news for me. I think it's wrong. So the evil inclination was stopped by God, not letting me do that. How many other things you've been stopped and you don't listen to the message? Before you scream, before you yell, before you go in after addiction, before you're doing things. Things happen. Things happen. And that's a very important thing that we need to remember. Let's continue with that section, same section, so we understand why we're getting uncomfortable. Go ahead.
Behold, how many afflictions befell Jacob to keep him from becoming infected by the evil inclination and to keep it distant from his lot? That is why he suffered punishments and afflictions and had no quiet repose. He said, I had no repose, nor had I rest, nor was I quiet, yet trouble came. Come and behold, how many afflictions do the righteous suffer in this world? Trouble after trouble, pain after pain, so that they can merit the world to come.
Keep going. I think that was easy to understand.
How 13. Many afflictions did Jacob have to suffer? As it is written, I had no repose. In Laban's house, I could not escape from him, nor had I rest. Because of that suffering that Esau's minister inflicted on me. And after that, there was the fear of Esau himself, nor was I quiet, on account of Dinah and Shechem.
So Jacob never had a moment to rest. And that was his gift. So I share a story with somebody today. And he liked the story. There is a story about Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. Rabbi Eliezer was the teacher of Rabbi Akiva. He's known to perform miracles. The village, all the villages used to ask him to bring rain because that's how people make money, you know, the farming. So Rabbi Eliezer tried to pray for rain for 3 days. No rain is coming. They ask his student, can you help me? Rabbi Akiva started praying and after half an hour, rain like that. All the village starts to respect him and say, hey, wait a minute. You need to know. You know, the king has two servants, one he loves and one he hates. When the one he loves asks for something, even for a little bit, he doesn't give it to him because he loves his prey. When the one he doesn't like asks for something, he gives it to him right away just to get rid of him. That's what Rabbi Akiva told him. Is that clear what I just say? A lot of time you think that when you get what you want, it's because God loves you. Not necessarily true. Maybe God don't enjoy your prayer. Hey, what I ask? $1 million, give it to them. Just get them out of my palace. But the one he loves, you ask for what? Just, you know, some payment to finish the month. I need to pay the rent. What I'm trying to say is, not always when things go well, you're closer to the Creator. Could you, when things not going so well, you're much closer. It depends what you need to overcome. Still, we not answer what exactly happened in Yosef. And let's understand it here, please.
Yeah, trouble came. It was a trouble and confusion about Joseph, which was the hardest affliction of all. Why? Because Jacob loved Joseph, who is the secret of the covenant through which Jacob entered Egypt. That is why Jacob loved him so much, because after this, it was written, I remember my covenant. The whole redemption was for his sake, because the Shekinah was there with him, and the covenant who is Joseph. Thus, the confusion about Joseph was harder on him than all other afflictions that befell him.
Why was it difficult? Try to imagine that God promised you something, and it's not seemed to happen. Or today, we cannot say God promised you. We can say, maybe you went to a psychic or look at your tarot or astrological chart, and they tell you something, and it's not seem to happen. You start being worried, because he knew that Yosef will be the one who continue. All of a sudden, Yosef died. He knew Yosef will be the one. Now he's gone. So how can you believe? Where do you get strength? Where do you get power to continue to believe? You can't. You don't have power to believe when everything that you pray for and everything that you know is supposed to happen is not happening. Where do you get the strength to continue to believe? You're almost losing yourself. So what do we do when you don't longer have the certainty like you had it before? Because with the time, we lose the dream. I'm sure a lot of you lost some dreams that you had. You know, when you were younger, you had a different dream. As you grow older, it's like, maybe that's not going to be a pilot. not going to do this. Another dream go by. What happened? Because you start seeing the fact not matching what you've been promised, then you're losing it. So the Zohar in verse 14 is telling us that how much Yaakov loved Yosef even more after he realized that only because of Yosef the redemption happened. Because if Yosef would not go down to Egypt, the all Egypt things wouldn't happen, and the all redemption from Egypt would not happen. So the beginning of all of it has to start with Yosef. But when we are doubting, we can't see. We can't see. Many people, I met many people who are spiritual or religious, and they believe that they need to suffer. They believe in it, actually. They believe that there's supposed to be a little pain involved. A little pain. You know, so if you suffer, God will be closer to you. That's such a lie. I don't know who invented it. And I like to, if you know many rabbis, to do debate with them. And from now on, hopefully the rabbi will teach differently. Because it say in the Talmud, En arur midabek bebaruch. Meaning, when you feel miserable, Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is God, which is called Baruch, cannot get closer to you. When you feel miserable, forget about God. You can pray. You're wasting your time. The atzvut, the sadness of a person when he pray, is not working. It's doing more damage. For that reason, it's saying in the Gemara, in the Talmud, that Rabbah used to do bdichuta, used to tell joke before he put the tefillin, before he say the pray. How can that be? Today they teach us, be serious. Quiet. Don't smile. Almost like I'm going for a passport picture. Without happiness, it's not working. This not functioning. Because what, is God depressed? Is God like, I had a tough day yesterday. Then we are making God like an image of a person. Chas v'shalom. Is God moody? I will punish you. Ah, I saw you. You did it. Well, it's not working like this. I don't know when put it in the brain of human. What? Only love, only happiness, only good. So why people get punished? If I put my finger, Chas v'shalom, into the socket, my two finger, what's going to happen, Chas v'shalom? Going to have a problem. Does that mean we can blame the electric company for what I did? That's how people look at God. Oh, I did something, now it's God's fault. No, God is an energy. But if energy doesn't have minus or plus, doesn't have punishment and reward as we think it is. It's an energy. If you connect to it in the wrong way, you kill yourself. If you connect to it in the right way, you rejuvenate yourself. And that's what most people have, the wrong things about God. And unfortunately, a lot of teachers not helping with that. But let's take it to the next level now. 189. That will help us to understand it more. And remember, that part is a little bit tough, but important. Go ahead, start reading it, please.
And she put off her widow's garments. Come and behold, could it be that Tamar, a priest's daughter, who was always modest, would commit incest with her father-in-law? He answers, she was a righteous woman and did this with wisdom. She was not lewd, but wise, and knew that what would come become of it. She approached him to do kindness and truth by him.
So, all the lady, I mean, we have angelic lady here tonight, so nobody will even debate that question. I mean, everybody agreed that Tamar was perfect and everything this, but as a woman, if you're sitting there, you should ask questions. Hey, 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 I don't care. I don't know, Pico, tent, right? A woman that you know who she is, huh? Now it's the prostitute tent, because I believe I'm the mother of the Messiah. Are you taking it okay? No? Why so quiet? Torah, I don't know, 3,400 years ago. Torah? I'm telling you literally what happened. Now Pico? No, too wild. And what, it's 3,400 years after. 3,400 years before? Okay. Yeah, they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't have Facebook, so nobody took a picture. People don't even ask questions about it. They just take it, Tamar, then she knew what she was doing. Let's read forward, please.
Come and behold, because she knew what would become of her efforts, the Holy One, blessed be He, aided her in the act, and she conceived immediately. All this was from the Holy One, blessed be He. It may be wondered why the Holy One, blessed be He, did not use another woman to bear these sons, but this one, Tamar. He answers, assuredly, she was needed for this, and no other woman would do.
You okay with that? Everybody's happy? No doubts? Good?
How did she know?
Right? I mean, Luisa is asking a great question. Maybe you know, you feel somebody is your soulmate, and you tell him, listen, I need to talk to you. About what? Do you want to marry me? No, we can't. No, it's only for Mashiach. It's a new style. We're coming with a new style. What are you saying? I didn't hear. Who said it? Robert? I'm sorry, but this... I'm sorry to tell you, but, you know, the tarot card, she said, I'm the Messiah grandmother, and she said, you are the Messiah grandfather, so can we do it? Huh? Let's get it over with, because, you know, I have to deliver the baby, you know? Already book a room for UCLA for the delivery. Mashiach. Huh? Why you? And then you ask, God maybe want to bring the Messiah, then why you? The tarot, me. Yeah, Gachaz. The idea is, my friend, how honest are you with yourself? That's what it brings down here. Are you real with yourself? Like, in the end of the day, when you are alone in the mirror. You know, I teach my kids one thing. I said, if you decide to lie to me, no problem. Lie to God, also no problem. Lie to your mom, no problem. When they were young, you can ask them. But there is one person you can never lie to, yourself. Don't ever lie to yourself. And I'm telling it to my student, telling it to everybody. In the end of the day, buy a little mirror. If you are alone in the car, if I drive in the car and I talk, people don't think I'm crazy. 20 years ago, when I used to drive and talk, I used to have therapy with myself, like talking, oh, I shouldn't do it. People look at you, you're crazy. Now they have the Bluetooth, they have the, you're not stupid. So you can cry, people think you're fighting. It's good. But in the whole 20 years ago, when I drove in Long Island, those of you know LIE, if you know New York, driving there, and there is traffic, and somebody is next to you, they see you talking to yourself. Weirdo. Usually it's a weirdo. And the idea is, buy a little mirror, look at the face, and say to yourself, Eliyahu, you know you lied today. Be honest. Look at that. Say it. So you see yourself at least. Tell it to yourself. In the end of the day, it's the best therapy you can do to yourself. Best therapy. I tell you that one person did mistake with that. And happened to live in LA, unfortunately. And I did the group of only for men. We invite only men. And we wrote, we didn't just do it in the mirror. We did also writing. And when you write, you burn it. He didn't burn it. He won't remember me. Not smart. Not smart at all. And he buried in the, where he, all the check, the old check after he paid, he put it there. His wife decided to go to his office to clean it for Pesach. Not good, not good. Very not. What was written there, lo chacham, wasn't wise. Problem, almost divorced, Baruch Hashem, they're back together. We're back together. It was very difficult. Very difficult. I told him, I said, where you kept it? I said, I forgot, I was burning it in the house, candle, schmendel. So today, just be careful if you do it alone. Go to the mirror, talk to yourself, what are you doing wrong? And you have to be real with yourself. Tamar was real. Tamar was real. It's the most real person you can meet. That's why her name is Tamar. Tamar means tam-mar. The bitterness is end. Tam amrirut. The mar is tam. That's why we eat dates or Rosh Hashanah also, right? We eat dates. We put dates in a charoset, in Pesach. Always date. If you're Ashkenazi, Sfaradi, there's dates. Doesn't matter what style, dates, right? Tu Bishvat, dates. All about tam mar. The end, the bitterness in your life. If you're capable to be honest with yourself, you're already 70% happy. You try it. You want to be happy? Start being honest with yourself at least. Don't lie to yourself. You know, if tomorrow somebody will tell me what you did yesterday was stupid, I'll say, you're right. Why will not be surprised? Because I know I was stupid with what I did. It's not a surprise to me. If you're not honest with yourself, everything that people tell you upset you. Why can I be upset? Don't you know you have a problem with that? Don't you know that's your problem? But if you don't know you have a problem, then everything that somebody else will tell you will bother you. If it's not real, why does it bother you? Why does it bother you? If somebody tells you, I don't like the arm coming from your back. Do you have an arm coming from your back? You don't. So you're not bothered by that. You're bothered by real thing. But if you're not telling the real thing to yourself, that's why you're not real. So it's coming after you to help you. Tamar was in a level, she was going for something that will be good for the universe. She wanted to be the one. She was begging to be the one. Like Leah was begging to be the wife of Jacob. She was never supposed to be with Jacob. Leah was supposed to be with Esau. But because she fights so hard to be with Jacob, the end result is amazing. I see that lately, and I spoke about lady last week, that the lady desire to change the world went down. I'm not saying guys are better because of that. Lady responsibility to change a guy is tremendous. It's a responsibility. The Zohar said that there is no guy who can truly change himself. And if a guy come and tell you this, not exist. A guy considered not a finished existent. A man is not a finished creation. To finish the creation, there is a woman. If a man doesn't have either a mother or a sister or a daughter or a wife, a female aspect around him is not complete. Will never be complete. There is no requirement for a woman to get married, by the way. There is a requirement for a man to get married. I don't know if you know that. So a man is not a complete bri'ah. It's not a complete creation. So it's very important to remember, I'm not trying to make somebody feel good, the women or the men. It's about the fact that the Zohar teaching us. So it's very important to remember what Tamar is doing here. She's taking charge. How many of you women, talking to women, taking charge? How many of you men taking charge in your life to make a difference in the world? Do you feel that you are part of making this world a better place? Or you're just living, making a living, becoming famous, becoming rich. No problem. All of those goals are good. But why? Why do you want to become famous? Why do you want to become rich? What's the purpose of it? Where does it end? After you become rich, now what? Well, when I have money, I will do this and this and that. What are you going to do? Personality is not something that changes. It's something that you have. But you can do it better with money, better with fame, better with whatever ingredient you ask for. But you don't change. A sharing person is a sharing person. What do you think? If you have $1 billion, you will share more? No. You have to trust me. Those of you who met people, I met people. I met billionaire, I met poor, I met all of them. Famous, not famous, the whole spectrum. Remember, I flew with these guys in his private jet. And we're landing in Vail, Colorado. I don't know if you know where it is. We're going to the supermarket. I'm waiting for a rich man to offer me a whole. My addiction is food. So all what I think is food. I don't think money, I think food. Money means equal for me, food. Money means extra steak. Money means, no, I can do this. Money means food. System, everybody has issues. My issues. So listen, the guy is very cheap. So you order, you guys, we go in supermarket, not even a restaurant, a little carrot and peas. I don't know the name of those peas. It's green that you eat them like that. Yes, yeah, snap peas or whatever you call it. What do you call it? Yeah, snap peas, yeah. So I'm looking and say, Eliyahu Baruch Hashem, you're going to end up with a carrot here. And all day long, it was 8 a.m., we have two. So I have to look the same because I don't want to destroy the atmosphere. It's nice. So, have the same, say, no. Why don't I get you a potato chips bag? This is a small potato. Oh, thank you. Very generous. So, it doesn't change, guys. You need to know. It doesn't matter how much money you have. Please remember, personality is personality. Personality is personality. You have to remember that. Personality is personality. You don't have money, you can share too. Share nice words. Share a nice letter, share something. Something to do with that. Tamar was built for that mission. She was built. And she was fighting it like no tomorrow. She was chosen for that, and I will not give it up until I will do it. How many of you guys are fighting for your purpose in life? Are you fulfilling other people's purpose? Or are you fighting for your own purpose? Most of us, fulfilling other people's purpose. You're going out there. What do? You're pleasing other people's dream. It was like 10 people have a dream in LA, and we are part of fulfilling their dream. How many of you have a dream? Have a dream and actually go after that. Like, I listened to a very famous speaker who say, you should only do a job of things that you like, because can you imagine you living your life and do a job that you don't love? I disagree with that. Because somebody asked me, what do you think about that verse? I said, you either do a job that you love, or either you do a job you don't love, but the money is good enough to do what you love to do after the work. That's my theory. But you have to have a mission, guys. You gotta have a mission. If you don't have a mission, what are you gonna add to this world? What are you doing here? Are you just breathing and living and buying a piece of property for where to be buried? You ever been in Florida, in Boca Raton? No? You know where Boca Raton is? The age there is 77 and above. You're not allowed in. Here's it. So if you go to another club, there is a special club, very wealthy club. They used to give lecture there. So the age group is 85 and above. And when I was studying to do public speaking, so the training was done by a very famous guy, the one who used to do it with Bill Clinton. I was lucky enough to have him. So he teach me, you know, he first trained me with kids, then he trained me with old people. So what do you do with old people? How do you make them listen? Say, every two verse, you mention the word sex. So that's it? Say it, just do it. So no, it cannot be, well, 85. Just say it. So I'm just saying, well, today we're going to learn in the parasha about what happened with Adam and Eve. When we think about sex, and you see the people like that. I couldn't believe. What I'm trying to tell you is your dream is very important. Don't lose it. And tonight, please go home, write three things that you want to be, and write three things that you're no longer chasing. The three things that you're no longer chasing has to be in front of your face. Because those are the things that you gave up. Tamar never gave up. And you can mention her name when you pray, when you meditate. Say, Tamar, please help me to be more consistent with my dream. Not to give up. Not to give up, not to give up. I tell you another story, even I'm supposed to tell you more Torah. There is a lady who lives in LA. She lives, I think, in Sherbourne. There is a street called Sherbourne, I think. And she gave birth to four boys. So she said to her husband, my first child will be, I want it to be a girl. The husband, very passive, very nice. It's on the menu. It's whatever. No. She got pregnant. She goes to see a doctor. The doctor said, look, you know, ultrasound. Oh, you have another boy. You know, they do 3D now and all this technology. You can even put a drum and it can play. Oh, it's a joke. So it's a boy. Mazal tov. She starts fighting with the doctor. No, it's not a boy. It's a girl. No, it's a boy. The doctor is Jewish, he said, you know, he has this little, it's a boy. Bottom line, after 9 months, blah, 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 girl. She gave birth to a girl. She win the opinion of all the 3D and Shmidi and all this and that. You have no idea how much power you have when you're chasing your dream. But you don't know how much power you have when you don't believe your dream can come true. You know what's stronger? Your doubts. Your doubt is stronger than your certainty. But if you're certain that you can win your doubts, then your doubt is no longer stronger than your certainty. You understand what I just told you? Your doubt is always stronger than your certainty. But if you're certain enough that your certainty is stronger than the doubts, then the doubt will no longer be strong than your certainty. I lost you, or are you with me still? Tamar had that formula. You want to make a certain amount of money? What are you thinking? What if you're not going to make it? Well, I will make it. 90% of the time is what if. And the what if is always winning. Be careful with that. Some people worry about love life. You know, they're going on a date. What if he doesn't call? What if she doesn't answer? Those doubts are stronger than what you wanted to happen. Why don't you busy with what you wanted to happen? Do you want this house? Do you want this marriage? Do you want that children? Do you want that amount of money? Do you want that fame? Stop with the concept of not wanting. It's a disaster that happened to people that getting closer to God. They think God doesn't want them to want. God is the chef that's waiting for you to ask. But why are you giving up in the middle? God asks you what you want. You say what you want. God went to the kitchen to prepare the food and you left the restaurant. What kind of behavior is that? And what if you say, I don't believe I deserve it. Who asks you if you deserve it? Who even asks you? It's my job to deliver. You ask, be patient and don't stop believing. I'm sorry I stopped for that, but I think it's important. Continue with that, please.
The seed of Judah was established with two women who bore King David, King Solomon, and Messiah. Two women, Tamar and Ruth, resembled each other. Both Tamar and Ruth lost their first husband and replaced them through similar efforts.
So another woman did it, Ruth. She didn't give up. Continue.
Tamar approached her father-in-law, who was next of kin to his dead sons, and thus worthy of taking her in levirate marriage. The reason for her act is stated in the verse, for she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him to wife. She therefore did this by her father-in-law.
And continue, last one, I think, well, before
this. Her first husband died, as did that of Tamar, and then she did the deed by Boaz, as it is written, and uncovered his feet and laid herself down. She then gave birth to Obed, You might ask why Obed was not born to another woman instead of in this manner. He answered, assuredly, it was necessary that she and not any other woman bore him. From these two, the seed of Judah was built and established. Both did well and brought kindness upon the dead, so they would later be perfected in the world.
And the last verse on this section, please.
This is the explanation of the verse. So I praise the dead that are already dead. As long as the husbands of Tamar and Ruth were alive, there was no praise to their name. After they died, their wives were taken in levirate marriage, and the kingdom of David, Solomon, and Messiah descended from them. Both Tamar and Ruth did kindness and truth by the dead, and the Holy One, blessed be He, helped them in this very act. Thus, all is fitting as it should be. Happy is he who studies the Torah day and night, as it is written. But you shall meditate therein day and night, that you may observe to do accordingly to do all that is written in it. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success.
So now we know there is two ladies who did it, Ruth and Tamar. Ruth and Tamar, Ruth with Boaz, and Tamar with Judah. We are learning something amazing from that. That a lot of time we are missing the point because we're dealing with a small desire. One of the worst sin you can do. The worst sin you can do is when you think small. You want to know when you do the biggest crime? When you think small. All people who think small are criminal. Why the criminal? Because what is to think small? I want what I want. That's thinking small. Selfish people think small. When you think sharing, it's not enough to have $1 million. It's not enough to have a small house. I need the biggest house in town because I want to host as many people as possible. I want to feed as many people. You think sharing. So when you ask for a little bit, we know one thing. You're thinking only about yourself. When you ask for big, you think about everybody else. So when people say being humble is to ask for small, that's not humble. That's selfish. Because the small you ask is, who is it for? Just for you. But when you're thinking big, you're thinking for everybody else. How can I make everybody happy? How can I make everybody benefit? Because every human being only can think about sharing. People don't think, I know a lot of people judge that everybody's selfish. People are not selfish, people are panicking. People are afraid, that's why they're selfish. So they're afraid to lose what they have. And they start panicking, they start having fear. But when a person thinks, normally when he's relaxed, he only thinks one thing, sharing. There's nothing that causes more joy to a human being than giving. People love to share. People love to share. Love to share. We think that there is people, oh, the one who don't love to share, there is some mental disease. There is people who are going around Pico to collect tzedakah, to collect charity. Every day. Think about every day, how many synagogues? Make the cheshbon very quick. 20 synagogues. $5 from each synagogue, you have $100, no tax, not so bad, right? $100, no Shabbat, 6 days, they work on Sunday. 6 days, not so bad, $600, no bad. You're doing well. So me, with my chutzpah, only me can do that, right? I ask one of them, do you want a job? I took them aside, hey, you want a job? Yeah, wash my car, pay. No. Nope. Do you want that to clean my house? No. All of a sudden, you find out, not exactly, it's like a poke away. So how do we know what to give? It's another story. So when do you feel great? When you give your $5, your $2, your $1, how much ego you have? I feel sharing. That's why they send you somebody like that. Because it's all from the ego. I have ego by giving. You have joy by taking from you. Everybody's happy. Match, what a great match, what a marriage. But when I'm saying like Tamar and Ruth, I'm begging God, please let me find where I can give more, where I can give more. Then you start finding the right people. They're coming to you and you come to them. I know I'm keeping you a little bit late, but I want to give you just another section with your permission, okay? Please.
And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? It is written earlier, and Israel said to Joseph, do not your brothers feed the flock in Shechem? Come and I will send you to them.
So,
I'm sorry. Why did the perfected Jacob, who loved Joseph better than his other sons and knew that his brothers hated him, send Joseph to them? The answer is because he knew they were righteous. He did not distrust them. The Holy One, blessed be he, caused all this to carry out, the decree he made to Abraham in the covenant between the pieces.
But still, it's not the answer. We need still to find the answer. Let's go to 103, please.
We have found it stated in ancient books that it was imperative that the sons of Jacob have mastery over Joseph before he descended to Egypt. For he had gone there before they dominated him. The Egyptians would have ruled over Israel in perpetuity, and Israel would not have been able to leave. Therefore, it came to pass that his brothers were Joseph's masters and sold him as a slave. Thus, when Joseph was later crowned king of Egypt, Israel ruled over them all. For they mastery over Joseph, their king, by selling him to be a slave. It was as if they ruled over the Egyptians themselves. This weakened Egyptian power and enabled Israel to be free from it.
So how many times it happened to you that whatever problem you have doesn't make any sense? I think it happened to you once in life, right? You know what I'm talking about, or... I'm losing you.
Yes.
For all of you?
Yes.
Something that is so...
No.
What's happening there? With the, there's a lot of tension there. I'm watching behind the flower. There. All right. So it happened to a lot of us that some problem don't make any sense why it should happen. But there is a big picture. In the big picture, Yosef has to come as a king in Egypt. So when they leave Egypt, they leave like kings, if you remember, for Passover. And the idea is, the universe was created by the divine, by God. The Mishnah said, "Bishvili nivra olam." The person should say, the universe was created for me. But we need to understand the deeper meaning of it. I meet sometimes people who have ego, and I meet a lot of time people who judge the people with the ego. And I don't know what is it for you? Or to be one of those people who judge everybody who think that the universe was created for them. Think about it. I have an opinion on that. The story goes like that. Tonight is the Hilulah again of the Megid Bemezrich. I'm sure if you go to Chabad, there is a big Simcha, and tomorrow morning, Megid Bemezrich was the student of the Baal Shem Tov. I'm going to tell you a story in a second, but first I want to answer what I just asked. The story goes like that. Usually on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there is tradition to serve around something look like tobacco. I don't know the name for it in English. It's a snuff. You smell it. You know what I'm talking about? It's like a silver box. You open it, and snuff. It's called
snuff.
Is it exist in the United States? Something like that. It's opening.
Not anymore.
No. Okay, so it's a tradition. So, in the middle of the prayer of the Amidah Rosh Hashanah, try to imagine before shofar. They had in the pocket that silver, beautiful thing. And when he come to pray, he bowed to God, and the box fell far. So the entire, instead of praying, this guy tried to reach the thing. All the people around him trying to pray, and he tried to reach it. The person next to him couldn't take it. The tzaddik, the chacham, those days they could read your mind, they could read what God even said to you. Invite that guy who was judging. Invite him to his office, say, please grab a chair, I want to talk to you. See? So the student was very happy. So I'm so glad you invite me to your office. Because I want to tell you all about that guy who prayed next to me when his silver box fell and he couldn't even let us pray. He said to him, the tzaddik said, don't worry about him. They accept his prayer, actually. So why am I here? So, well, in heaven, I get an email from heaven, say the tzaddik, right? That you've been judged for this year to be a really bad year. So why? He said, because it's written like that. It's written that the angels cannot judge a human being until he judges another person. If you don't judge nobody all year long, the angel cannot touch you. You get whatever you want. The only thing that you get judged for is what you judge others. He say, because the entire prayer you're busy with it, the angel now busy with your case. Now it seems like not fair, right? You are looking at that story and say, hey, Eliyahu, not fair. It's not about fair. Don't judge. Don't judge. Don't judge. You never know what's really going on. You never truly know who is the person next to you. Never know. Never know. And that's the problem that we have when people get into stigmata, into too much religion. They want a certain frame how the person needs to be. But we're losing the touch with the soul. We are so attached to the frame. What they need to wear, how they need to dress, how they need to behave. We're losing it. We're losing what the soul looks like. And we are going after the body. I want to end up with the story. Because tonight is the Megid. The famous story of the Megid, and we can learn a lot from it. The Megid was very sick. By the way, his name is Rabbi Dov Ber from Mezrich. He was a great rabbi, great Kabbalist, living in Ukraine. And he was sick with his leg, he was sick with other area of his body. And the Baal Shem Tov started to become famous. But he was against the Baal Shem Tov because Baal Shem Tov was famous to feel the Torah, not to think the Torah. Everything is a feeling. And in those days, nobody feel. You do, and that's it. Like a lot of places in Pico. You got to do it. Don't feel. So, his wife called to him and said to him, honey, maybe go see this Chacham. Go see this Tzaddik. He make miracle. He says, stop it. This guy's crazy. He's dancing too much. He's happy too much. Something's off with him. We're supposed to study. That's it. So, honey, many people came back cured after he touched them. Say, honey, I don't believe in this. He said, please, do it. Say, okay, for you, I do it. He take his driver, horses, you go. He arrived to the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov was waiting outside for him. So, the Michigan is here, but I will do everything for my wife. So he go down with the horses. The Baal Shem Tov grab him by the shoulder and say, I'm so glad you are here. I'm going to tell you a story. You know, first time I arrived to this place, you know, it was difficult. The horses were tired. They were hungry. But you know what? We gave them food. And they were okay. And that's the end of the story. So the Megid, look at the driver. And this guy is totally lost. So now we're going in. Serve food. Soup. Beautiful. And they're eating. So the Megid said, I don't believe I'm doing it, but we got to get out of here. So again, he started eating. What is eating? The soup. The Baal Shem Tov hanging on his back. Again. So, you know, in the same trip, on the way here, the driver was hungry too. He didn't have food. We gave him soup and a food. So, okay, I got it. He said, I got it. So the dinner, everybody go to the room. The Megid tonight go to his driver. He said, listen, Let's get the act together. We pack everything and we get out of here. And then I tell my wife, I was here. Didn't work. The driver say, listen, I'm scared. It's night. We don't have anything. Can we wait early morning? We leave it. Before Shachrit, before this, we go. So, okay, that's a good deal. So, you know, this is like 12:30 a.m. The servant of the Baal Shem Tov knock on the door of the Megid. No, say, yes, how can I help you? Say, listen, my master study now Rabbi Isaac Luria, this book, and he study Kabbalah, and he wants you to join him. At that point, he started laughing. Well, what are you going to talk about? The food? Okay. So he go in there to his room, and the Baal Shem Tov ask him, do you hear about Kabbalah? Do you know what it is? So, well, I think I know what Kabbalah is. He's a teacher himself, he's a rabbi. So you heard about the book called Shaar Ruach HaKodesh. It talk about all the name of the angels and everything like this. I say, I think I know. I know that book. He make fun of him at that point. I say, okay. I say, can you read it to me? So of course, he opened the book and he started reading it. And And he explained to him, he said to Baal Shem Tov, maybe you don't understand what I say, but that's what it means. The Baal Shem Tov, very nice to him, doesn't say anything. All of a sudden, he jumped from his chair to the Megid, he takes the book and he closed it like that. And he screamed at him, what are you doing? And the Megid at that point looked totally nuts. This guy is crazy. I said, what do you want? He said to him, let me read the same page. He opened the same page. He read words by words. Every angel he mentioned come down from heaven and appear in the room. At that point, the Megid started understanding he's dealing with a serious guy. He say, in the name of an angel, pull it out. At that point, he started to be ashamed that he judged him. He said, I'm so sorry. I have to be honest. He said, I know. Don't worry. I know. He started crying. He said, I forgive you. Don't worry. And then he looked at him. He said, you know why you are here? He said to the Megid. He said, oh, I'm supposed to get cured. He said, no. You are my successor. You are the one who continue my path. But we never cure him. He stays sick forever. I went to his room physically. I went to see the room where he did the healing therapy there. I went there to see it with my own eyes. It's unbelievable. He never gets cured. Never. He was sick all his life till he died. Sometimes you go and ask, you meet people, and we think we meet them to get cured, to remove problems, to have money. There is a different goal. There is a big picture. Big picture. Much bigger than us. The story of the Megid, that he worked only on one thing, on himself. When he asked the Megid, what did you work on spiritually? He said, only one thing. What is it? Work on myself, not to think that I'm better than others. That's all what he did, all his life. He worked at this, no. I only work on one thing. How can I be not to think that I'm better than others? And that's why he became the successor. When you used to ask him, how do you work on the ego? He said, there is no solution. My master said, there is no solution for ego. It always will be there. Guys, I'm sorry I keep you a little bit late. It was a lot of material to cover. So forgive me if you have... thank you very much, people at home. I'm not going to end up with meditation because of time, okay? So thank you. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.